Order, and we'll introduce this as an organizational meeting, and we have adoption of some committee rules, and I'm told that we can't change them whether we wanted to or not, so there isn't much sense in discussing them much further, I would guess. If someone has a
move, we adopt the rules.
Move, we adopt the rules.
Thank you, Senator Starr. Senator Starr moves we adopt the rules. Since we have a six-member committee, the only two of which are missing are caucus leaders.
Three.
Who determined that they had to be on here to keep being a four-man committee, and that way they can, without too much ado, do a minority report if they wish. We're pretty well set up. Welcome, welcome.
Sorry, I'm late.
That's all right. Your committee chair made it here before some of the committee members, so that's an accomplishment.
I still beat Senator Klarnow, though. Life is good.
I was just mentioning that our two caucus leaders that wish to be on here so they could facilitate a minority report were not here.
Oh, well. How are you?
We have just had a motion to adopt the rules, and I didn't think there was much room for discussion since we were told we'd adopt them or else. So that kind of limits discussion. If you have the words, now you have the say-so of whether we can or not. So
If you're
ready to go for it, is there any opposition to adopting these rules? Hearing none, so ordered. I kind of like the idea of having an opportunity for folks to introduce themselves. There's always new folks here involved in the workings of this marvelous organization here. And fortunately in the Senate, we don't have too many new members. They may be new to a particular committee, but at least they know the process. So we don't have to do too terrible much orientation, with the exception that with a new governor and a lot of new policy issues coming from the executive department and changes in leadership, it's going to be nice to kind of get a little direction on where we're headed. So I would like to start over to my left here with Senator Burdick and have her tell you what district she's in and a little about her past history and her goals for our committee, and then we'll proceed on down to my co-chair or vice chair, Senator Morissette, and head that direction.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Ginny Burdick, and I represent Senate District 18 in Southwest Portland and Tigard. And I'm new to the human resources area, so my immediate goal is to get up to speed, and my secondary goal is to find a good way to participate.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Bill Morissette, I represent Senate District 6, which is part of Lane County and Linn County. It includes the University of Oregon Law School and Sotaville, which is near Brownsville. It's a fairly rural district, but it's a real mix of community of interest. So it's different than we've had before. I've been very fortunate, I think, to have served for two terms in the House as the vice chair of this House Committee on Human Resources, and that included joint interim trip to Eastern Oregon with our chair and chair of the House, and we visited 14 sites, medical sites, from hospitals to nursing homes, clinics, and EMT ambulance places, and I become really aware of the problems in rural Oregon in providing adequate medical care. The importance of distance learning and communication in many ways. And I think it's the most important thing that we do in the legislature now. This comes from someone who spent his life teaching, but I think that this is extremely important because we have so many vital interests, and there are so many people potentially at risk. And so we're going to have to do some very careful balancing of resources and try to find some solutions to protect the hospital, the rural hospitals, the nursing homes, assisted living, and the lives of people in general. So I take this as probably the most important thing that I will be involved in this session.
Thank you. I'm Senator Kate Brown. I represent Senate District 21, which is a little bit of Northeast Portland. I finally reclaimed all of inner Southeast Portland, and I have Milwaukee. This is I know. And this is my first time on Human Resources Committee since being in the legislature, and I look forward to working with all of you. I think it'll be great fun and an interesting learning experience. So,
thank you very much, State Senator Charles Starr. Now, no longer representing only Western Washington County, I represent Newburgh and Yamhill County, Wilsonville and Clackamas County, St. Paul and Kaiser and Marion County. So I'm getting acquainted with county commissioners and folks in all of these counties. It gives me greater opportunity, but it's been my pleasure in the last year to serve as an ad hoc member of the county folks, well represented here today, and that is an opportunity for us to learn really about where the services are delivered. And we know that there's never going to be enough money to do everything we'd like to do. Washington County had 846 individuals volunteer 26,000 hours. Is that a biennium or is that a year? Well, 1 year. Starting February 1st, we're going to double that or more. I think that's the only way that we'll ever really deliver all the services that we possibly can. And I'm really pleased to be back on Human Resources. I haven't been on this committee since the House when I served there some 8 years ago. But looking forward to this session. I'm not looking forward to all the really tough situation we're going to hear about in the next few months.
I'm Senator Bill Fisher, and I had the astounding experience of, on the 15th of last December, or December a year ago, going from number 23rd to number one, in districts anyway. And so I've been getting all of Joan Duke's phone calls, and they changed from the North Coast number one to the South Coast number one. Of course, we always knew we were number one down there anyway, but all jokes aside, this is my fourth session as chair of the Senate Health and Human Services Committee. I've had the opportunity to serve with a lot of outstanding people in these four sessions, and this will be no exception. Welcome new members that we haven't had set on here, and some of the old members back that I served with in the House. And I guess one of my main goals is just to get through this session process alive. It's probably frustrating, and one of my constituents who had been a former legislator advised me when I came to the Senate. He said, Bill, he said, and of course, you got to remember it's Christmas Eve or Christmas party, and he had been imbibing a little bit, and he was kind of waving around the center of the living room floor there in the house we were having the party in. And he said, Bill, he said, don't serve on the Health and Human Services Committee when you get to the Senate. And I had just been elected to the Senate and hadn't served yet. And I listened to him, and then he went on and he says, and whatever you do, he said, don't ever be the chair of the Health and Human Services Committee. So much for how I take advice. But it's something that I have felt, in a way, called upon to do. I've dealt with the human services arena for 35 years in one form or another. I felt that I would like to bring my expertise as much as I've got to bear for the working of the state in the areas that I know. And I was raised on a farm and a diversified ranching experience all through my growing up years. So I've been working in human resources and primarily natural resources in the Senate. I represent all of Curry County, part of Coos County, a good portion of Douglas County, and a little tip of both Josephine and Jackson County. So I have the whole south coast from Bandon south, and then have to come clear back either through California around the Horn to get back down over to Weimar, which is my easternmost and southernmost portion of my district. It's a little awkward to serve, but they're good people, and I'm enjoying getting acquainted and learning things about the coast and fishing and things that I have never known before. So it's always a growing experience for us, and I believe that this session will be nothing more. I've had experience with having a six-member committee where you have to have four votes to get something out, which I had in my freshman session here in the Senate, thanks to Brady Adams' judgment. I had a little different mix, though. I've never had it, and now I've got a six-member committee, one of whom I've got to persuade from the opposite persuasion to pass anything out of here. So we obviously have a new working relationship, and I really think that we can think positive about this, and perhaps in this way do some more things for the people of the state of Oregon that we haven't maybe been able to cooperate with as fully as we ought to have in the past. So I'm looking optimistic to this session. I am going to be very, very careful in bills that we pass out that increase regulations or increase expenses to professional groups that are in the process of trying to provide help and service to the people that need those services out in the general public. We've got to be extremely careful of our fiscal responsibilities. And so I'm going to try to work on both sides of the issue on that and not create more expenses for government if I can help it, not create more expenses for the private and nonprofit sector either. So in the process of doing that, we'll try to do the best we can by things. I would like also now to have Marjorie Taylor, our staff. I just got a note here. Senator Clarno, our other caucus leader, is in a meeting and will join us as soon as possible. So I'll interrupt whoever is in the process of talking at the time she comes and let her tell you her background and let her greet you. I would like to have Marjorie Taylor, our staff administrator, go ahead and introduce her staff, and you might include the page in that if you would.
Certainly. Sarah Nell Allen will be the administrative support for our committee, and Darcy is going to be our Senate page. And again, I'm Marjorie Taylor, and we're here to help you.
And that means if any of you out there have a note that you want to get my attention, and for some reason or other I'm never looking in your direction, or if you refuse to acknowledge you, you can write on a piece of paper and hand it to Darcy, and she'll come up here and make sure I get it. So we appreciate having Darcy. We appreciate having Sarah Nell, and I'm very happy to be back working with Marjorie Taylor again, who was my administrator for a very short time, and one who organized our trip through rural Oregon and drove us so very carefully at high speed from one appointment to another. She'll never live this down, by the way.
And I was sure members of the committee. I'd like to remind you that I was following Representative Cruz.
I wasn't a backseat driver. I sat in the passenger side and clenched my hands on.
I'm sure you have other people who'd like to testify.
I would like to take one moment. We have several members of the Governor's Commission on Senior Services here, and I see one of the most comical gentlemen there involved in that committee sitting back here from the Pendleton area, and John Brenner. We appreciate having you here and your other colleagues. And I had a little snafu, and I came down here under a cloud, so I'll keep going back and trying to get out from under that cloud at 3:15 with your other members who were to meet with me at 1 o'clock when the committee met, and somehow or another didn't get the fact that we had had to change our appointment to 3:15. So I've already gotten off to a bad start with you folks, but I'll try to change that. Let's get into our invited testimony. I've asked Gary Weeks, who is the new department head of Department of Administrative Services. It's good to see Gary back in Oregon. We lent him to Maryland for a short time, and he's come back now instead of in the human resources arena. He's in the Department of Administrative Services arena, and he's had considerable experience in other departments of Oregon state government. So welcome, Gary, and we'll let you tell us a little bit about how things are going here since we have a whole new governor and a a lot of new department heads and other things, and I noticed by this morning's paper that we're still getting new department heads. So,
Mr. Chair, right, members of the committee, I'm Gary Weeks. I'm the governor's designee for the director of the Department of Administrative Services, having just recently appeared before Senator Brown and her colleagues in the Rules Committee for confirmation, which I guess we'll get to the floor and stuff. So at some point soon.
Talk good so you get our vote.
Pardon me?
Talk good so you get our vote.
Yes, sir. I'm going to try to do that. I was just sitting here listening to you, thinking that it was almost 2 years ago to the day that I last appeared before your committee.
Could I interrupt you just a second? Senator Klarno has arrived. Thank you. And we've all introduced ourselves. And if you want to take a couple seconds and tell us where you represent and your
Beth Cotto from
history and so
on. Central Oregon. And I represent 99% of Deschutes County, all but 1%. I did have like four counties, and now I'm down to one.
Oh. Where's the other 1%?
Well, it goes to Senator Ferrioli, who represents. He said in a meeting today that I just got it. Yeah, he thinks 34,000 square miles, I think.
No,
he said.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So most everything east of the Cascades, this is his, except for Deschutes County and Senator Harper's district in Klamath Falls.
Welcome aboard. We're glad to have you on.
Thank you. Thank you.
Health and Human Services Committee. And I'll give you and Kate the opportunity to overrule me at any time.
Oh, you will. You want to be careful.
Careful. Yeah.
Go ahead, Gary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was saying, members of the committee, I was just sitting back to think it was almost 2 years ago to the day that I last appeared here before you. At a kind of a sad time, because I was saying to all of you how much I appreciated the chance to work with your committee and the legislature as a whole, and I was 3 days away from going to Baltimore, where I've been for the last 2 years working with the Annie Casey Foundation, which is the country's largest children's foundation, and it was a good experience, and one I thought would last about 4 years. At least that was my commitment to the foundation 2 years ago, was that I would stay 4 years, because that's about all I could be away from my two grandsons and stuff, I figured, while they were growing up. And as it turned out, Ted Kulongoski decided to run for governor, and I had the opportunity to come back, which is wonderful. I mean, it's great to be back. I enjoy coming back and working with the people in the legislature that I've known for a long time, and people in government. So I appreciate the chance to be back here now, 2 years almost to the day later, Mr. Chairman, to visit with you. And you may have to give me some guidance on what you'd like today, but I'm prepared to talk with you a little bit about how the governor sees my work, what he expects from the Department of Administrative Services in terms of leading state government.
As we talked over the phone, that's kind of what I would like to do, because with your prior knowledge of the human resources arena and your work in the start up of the reorganization process and one thing and another, gives you a tremendous overview of comparison with maybe how things are going to change a little bit, or what directions we're heading in, because we're trying to kind of get acquainted now with a whole new philosophy, and we haven't had much time yet with the governor to really know where he's coming from. I still have yet to meet with his human resource people, so we're all kind of in a arena where we don't really know exactly what to expect, or what, and probably you don't even know what to expect yet either for 100%, but any direction you can give me how you're going to, DAS will work with human resources, because it's kind of the watchdog entity over the other agencies. You can have a lot of influence on how things are set up over there. And so,
all right, Mr. Chairman,
I don't know. You know, I don't want to pin you down.
That's helpful. And then I'll
perjure yourself or anything like that. But
I'm not going to perjure myself. I understand the truthfulness part of the statute very well, and I don't think I've ever violated it. So let me. I can talk, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee, a little bit about the DAS orientation, and then maybe talk a little bit about how that fits with the reorganization and your review of the reorganization, the governor's review of the reorganization, too. In making this appointment for me to come back here to DAS, I think one of the things the governor really was interested in was to try to create a more visible way, a more visible position within state government to manage the operation and the performance of government as a whole. In many cases, the governor describes this position as the chief operating officer for state government. And to some extent, that has been true in the past. The person who ran DAS was kind of given a little extra status and stuff to manage government. But this Governor Kogoski has made it real clear that he really wants somebody to be held accountable for the performance of government, and that somebody's me at this point. And I had some conversation with Senator Brown and the other members of her committee yesterday about this. So it's maybe a little bit redundant, but we're really interested, the governor is and I am, in trying to find ways to improve the performance of government in a very measurable way. I mean, it's, lots of people talk about improving the performance of government, and it can be pretty trite to say it. This governor wants it done in a way that we can measure our performance and be able to show to people whether we're making progress or we're not. And we're going to do that in a couple of ways. One is in the way that we actually lead these agencies. The governor wants to have performance expectations for every agency head in government, and we'll start with the largest. And those performance expectations are going to set out as clearly as we can what the governor expects from the agency leader in leading that agency. And set it out in a way that we'll be able to sit down with this agency head at some point in the future and be able to say, you either met these or you didn't. And I think for many agency heads, that frankly will be something they're going to be happy to have. You know, I've had the good fortune and the opportunity to work under four different governors. In some cases, I wished I had a much clearer set of instructions, to be honest with you. You know, I did what I thought was right and assumed the governor would stop me if he or she felt that I was drifting off course. But it wasn't like having something that I could sort of lean on and say, this is where the governor wants me to take this agency. And that's what we want. That's what we want to do in this government, and then be able to hold agency heads accountable for their performance. So that's one track that we want to go down. The second track is one of trying to build for the agency as a whole a set of performance goals for the agency to manage itself to. And those performance goals would be things that, to start with, the agency is going to design initially, and we already have the foundation of that. Every agency has given us the goals that they think they should be working on and the ways that we're going to measure their progress to those goals. Now, our job is to go through those goals and work with the agency to say, are these the right goals? And are these the right ways to measure them? Because you can measure something any number of ways to determine progress. And not only do I want us to do that within government, but I want to bring together some folks from outside of government. Like if we were looking at the Department of Transportation, they have a set of goals. I don't frankly know if those meeting those goals address the needs of people for transportation in this state. And so I'm interested in bringing some folks outside of government to sit down and look at those transportation goals and say, yeah, these are the right goals, and this is the correct way to measure them, or no, these are not the right goals, these you should amend these or add to these and so on. And the result will be, from that whole process of agency outside view, is, I hope, some real performance goals for agencies that have a lot of support behind them, a lot of agreement behind them, and then measurements so that we will be able to tell you from biennium to biennium whether an agency is making progress in achieving those goals. And if they're not, you should hold us accountable for why they're not making that progress. And eventually, you tie this to the budget. And the reason I say eventually is I spent much of the last 2 years on the East Coast working with state governments and this performance management tool. And it's frequently people want to leap to performance budgeting, and because that seems to be the, you know, the outcome that folks want to have, tie the budget to performance, which is a good outcome. But you need to have established, first of all, this foundation of a good, solid set of goals that everybody agrees are the right things to be working on and how you measure that, and then tie that back to how you fund it and so on, to what extent you fund it and what way you fund it. So I think eventually we'll be able to build this whole system into a real performance budget system. And I've tried to get the agency heads that I've talked to about this to think about this in terms not of performance measurement, but performance management, because there's a very great difference between those two. I mean, it's one thing to measure performance. It's another thing to manage to those performance goals and stuff. And that's what we want to do, the latter. We want to manage to those performance goals. So, you know, our hope and expectation is to change the way government performs through these devices. And the other thing that the governor has said regularly, including late yesterday to all the agency heads at the appointment department, is that, you know, he's not interested in us doing business the same way we've always done it. You know, he wants examples of how, from agencies, of how we can do business in a different way. And that can be along a whole variety of ways. It's not just, you know, how do you privatize what we do? That's one thing. But how do you, for example, in my arena, how do we use the state's information technology expenditures, you know, in a way that not only supports state government, but can contribute to some of the things we want to do with economic development policy and so on? We are, in technology, a major consumer, purchaser, developer of technology. But we don't really have a plan that connects what we do with what people do in the private sector, with the technology that goes on in the outside. And even our own plan has a lot of shortcomings around how we manage the networks in this state, how we manage the telecommunications in this state. Now, the state office building in Portland has 21 different telephone systems. And my building, the DAS building across the street, has 4. You know, that's low-hanging fruit in the governor's view and in my view, that we should be able to find ways to create efficiencies around that kind of thing. We run 4 large networks in this state. We ought to find ways to say, do we actually need to manage 4 networks, or can we have 1 network? These are just examples of the kind of, what we're looking for is real change that we're going to make. Not sort of fluff and stuff, but real differences that we can come back to you and to the public, and the governor can point to things and say, here's how it's different. My job in DAS is to make that happen, to create those opportunities for change, to encourage the agencies, encourage, push, tug, pull, however you want to describe it, the agencies to work on those kinds of things on behalf of the legislature and on behalf of the governor. So I think we have some real opportunity here. I mean, it's going to be a difficult session, as you all well know, and I think Senator Starr said it correctly. You're going to hear terrible stories. Stories that are going to want to make all of us try to find a way to deal with them. But within all that difficult, all those difficult decisions are also the opportunities to really do things differently. I mean, those of you that have been in this process for a long time know when things are flush and there's plenty of money, you can virtually not get rid of something because it's always someone's thing. And it's in times where you're really up against the wall, in difficult fiscal times, where you have to make difficult choices, that you have your best opportunity to really find a way to do business differently. So I wish we didn't have to make some of the decisions we're going to have to make, but we also have an opportunity that we ought not to lose, and we're going to try to, as the executive branch, try to do our best to help put those opportunities before you, Mr. Chairman. So. Let me.
Yes, sir. Senator Morissette.
I've been interested in the performance measures for quite some time, and have talked to various people about supporting them. And the objection, one of the objections, was how do you measure quality? And when we get to performance measures and management in healthcare, I am particularly interested in how we measure success, because, you know, while the nursing home, assisted living, mm-hmm. you know, whether or not we're going to be able to maintain the residencies of people who don't have the resources, I mean, these are quality issues, and so there's always that problem of counting, you know, quantity, you can count successes by numbers, but quality is different, and so are you working on that aspect of...
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Morissette, I think we're much less interested in counting and measuring things than we are trying to determine the quality of services and results, outcomes, and so on like that. I mean, there's a saying in this whole business about what gets measured gets done, which is true. But if you're just measuring things and people are only working on things that don't affect the quality. We're not really interested in that. I mean, my work in the last 2 years has been all about building quality performance management systems.
Good.
And we should be able to, in the long term care arena, whether it's nursing homes, residential care, assisted living, there are measurements of quality. You know, not bed space or a number of nursing days or so on. There are measurements of true quality. Quality of service, health care, capacity, access. Those are all things that are measurable things that tell us something about how well the system's working. I mean, I have a father in a nursing home who's been in one for a long time. I can tell you about quality and how you should evaluate it for nursing home care.
May I follow?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it all costs money that we may not have. So there, that's the piece.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Moore said, I hope we'd come at this, first of all, by asking agencies to find ways for us to measure performance that aren't cost, that don't incur cost for us, because I believe that's possible. And I would be disappointed if agencies used the cost excuse as one for not being able to measure our performance. There are ways to measure our performance. They're not costly. I mean, I've worked on it in the states of Georgia, Arkansas, Maine, Louisiana over the last few years. All those states are in very similar situations that we have. And they're all working on performance systems within their state government to try to do just the thing I think we want to do here.
Okay. May I?
Yes.
Okay, if we probably know what a good quality healthcare system, the components of it, we may look at a particular group of homes and say, okay, this is really the best one because of all of the things that they provide, but there is a dollar amount that usually is attached to that. And so we might, now if we're going to make a decision that we want a certain quality, then that I guess means we're going to have to find the money to do it. Or else, if we're going to be cutting back, we're going to have to admit that this is not the best quality available, that maybe we can say, well, this is the best we can afford.
Mm-hmm.
But that might mean moving some people out of a nursing home or shutting that nursing home down and moving them 50 miles away to another one. So those are the difficulties. So I guess you can identify quality, but can we afford it? And if we can't afford it, can we admit that, gee, we can't do it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Morissette, I understand your question, I think, maybe better than I did first. And I appreciate the fact that, you know, to buy a, you know, full quality system may cost more than we can afford. But what we are going to purchase, I mean, I know this Legislative Assembly is going to make some decisions about where our money is best spent, whatever amount we have. Once those decisions are made, then we should be able to measure the extent to which we are actually providing that service at whatever level we can afford, to the extent to which we're providing that service with the highest possible quality. I mean, we should be doing that, regardless of whether we can afford the Cadillac or the Ford version of it. So I just would like not to have agencies sort of escape the challenge of high performance because there's not enough money to do what everybody would like to do. We still, from my view, we still want to urge agencies to try to achieve the highest possible performance they can.
Thank you.
Senator Burdick.
Thank you. I have actually two questions, one kind of specific and one more general. If Measure 28 fails, there are some impacts that are rather severe that I'm not sure anybody predicted at the time our last special session passed the cuts list. That what I'm talking about is some of the medically needy programs. Mm-hmm. I heard recently from the head of the transplant unit at Oregon Health Sciences University, who said that heart and liver and kidney transplant patients had been notified that if it goes down, they will be their anti-rejection medicine will not be paid for. And there are other circumstances involving payments for drugs, and these drugs are very expensive, up to $1,500 a month. And then I read in the paper that one of our colleagues over on the House side wants to restore state troopers and take some money out of a program to remodel homes for disabled people, which is, it sounds like a very worthy program, but it does not sound like an immediate life and death program. So I guess my question is, remember, I'm a new member to this area, so I'm just getting started here. But if Measure 28 does fail, how much do you have any flexibility within the existing budget process to deal with those situations where you're looking at, you know, certain fatal outcomes if those cuts are made in particular areas? Do you have any flexibility at all to come in and literally save people's lives who otherwise would most certainly lose them?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burdick, we have House Bill 5100 as our guidance from the legislature, which is not specific. It's like in human resources, it's by a division and program. Here's the kind of cuts you'd have to take if the measure fails. So within that instruction of House Bill 5100, yeah, there's flexibility in there for the agency to make some choices on how those cuts would occur, because the legislature wasn't specific about each of the cuts. And we've done that. I mean, the agency has drawn up a list of cuts. I think within the amount that has to be reduced, there are going to be some profound results, serious and profound results for some populations, whether it's medically needy, alcohol and drug affected folks, the mentally ill folks. And so the department, if it's in the case of DHS, can cut it any number of ways, but I, you know, it'd be less than honest to say that somebody is not going to be affected no matter how they cut it. And the governor has been really clear thus far in saying that he has no intent to ask the legislature to reopen House Bill 5100, nor to ask you to come in and make any changes in that measure that was passed by the legislature. So there, the answer is, yeah, within 5100 there's some flexibility, but however the department exhausts that flexibility still is going to result in some very, very difficult choices.
Well, that's correct, but I guess what the situation I was referring to is that apparently some patients have been sent notifications that the drugs will be stopped, and yet you have a program that apparently is still intact, that's much less of an emergency for the people involved, and a good program. But whether you have you've made a priority list or thought ahead to changes that you will make within that to where lives are at stake immediately.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, Senator Burdick, you know, when Jean Thorne's here, she may be able to do a better job explaining this because she's made the cuts. But
yeah, I might explain. We have Jean Thorne coming to the next meeting, and also hopefully some of the governor's staff involved in human resources arena. So we maybe get a little more definitive.
But I want to know now, Mr. Chairman.
Well,
Senator Burdick,
I'm glad you asked that question, because I told Gary I wouldn't put him on the spot.
Mr. Chairman, and Senator Burdick, I don't mind being on the spot. I'm trying to give you the best answer I can on behalf of the department that I didn't actually sit down with and go over all the cuts, and I have reviewed what they've proposed. And your question is, have they proposed something that's of less consequence to some population than another reduction that would be of much greater consequence? And I think they've tried to balance the consequences of all the clients as they've made these cuts, recognizing that it's not going to be pretty for some group. And so I think your question is a good one. I don't have the answer to whether or not this was the right choice for us to cut in a program that developed housing for developmentally disabled folks, in contrast to medically needy people who are going to lose heart medication. I'm not certain, you know, if that was the right choice. That's the choice that the department has made, and I hope that Jean can give you a little more rationale for it. But.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, my general question was, and this is probably more appropriate, the state of Washington, I've just heard press reports, I haven't followed it in detail, but apparently is trying to do the same thing of getting away from current service level funding into performance-based and goal-oriented funding decisions. Are you working with people in the state of Washington, and have you observed their success or failures? Is there any synergism there as you're trying to do the same thing?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Burdick, the governor has been to Washington and with some of our staff and has spoken with Governor Locke up there and the staff. And we are looking to see if there's some synergy between our states. We're looking to see what the results have been. I haven't had an opportunity yet to visit with the Governor Locke's staff. I mean, we will do that because we want to see how what each of us is doing is working out. And so that's what I can tell you about that. But the governor is very interested in you know, developing this kind of relationship with the state of Washington.
So you haven't formed any conclusions as to whether they're on the right track and worthy of maybe trying to copy some of the things they're doing?
Senator Burdick and Mr. Chairman, I don't think we formed a conclusion about that. But we're obviously very interested in what they're doing. They're similarly watching what we're doing, asking for information about the kind of ways we're managing. You know, we're managing our budget cuts.
Right.
So, I mean, there are some things that they're not having to deal with that we do. They don't have an Oregon health plan, and they have a different plan and stuff. But they don't have this history that we do around something that we call the Oregon health plan stuff that makes our decisions a little bit different than their decisions. So,
back to Senator Morissette.
Okay, thank you. On the spot, Gary, the governor's State of the State address left a gaping hole in the area of health and human services. I mean, he did not use those words. He did not address the needs of the people that we serve. And by omission, it's kind of scary because he talked about the places that he would work to satisfy their needs and fund, and less the impression that perhaps that's where he'd be taking his money out of the Health and Human Health Services area. Have you had an opportunity to talk to the governor about his priorities in this area?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Morissette, yeah, we've had lots of conversations, and many people have pointed out to me that he didn't talk about people in the human services arena in the inaugural address. I have to tell you, that's not because he hasn't thought about this. I mean, I've spent a lot of time with him as we built this budget. And the choices that were made were very difficult for him. And the fact that he didn't refer to a group of people in his inaugural address, you know, I just want you to know, does not mean that he hasn't thought about this, nor that he doesn't realize the consequences of this budget on certain populations. I mean, he very much does understand that there are going to be real challenges in mental health, alcohol and drug, developmentally disabled, senior programs. I mean, he understands that this budget, you know, as it was presented to you, creates a number of challenges in those areas. And we're going to try to figure out how to, as the budget rolls through this process with the legislature, we're going to try to work with the legislature to figure out whether we can, you know, address those challenges. But he's not ignorant of that, and I've told others that the fact that he didn't speak to it in his inaugural address is not an indication of the struggle that he's had personally trying to build this budget and recognizing some of the holes that are in it.
Yes, Senator Brown.
Thanks. Rick, could you talk a little bit about the benchmarks and progress board and how you see this all fitting into performance-based measurements and performance-based budgeting?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, Senator Brown, thank you for the question, because the governor sees a very important role for the progress board. He was at the progress board meeting yesterday to give them this message, but he wants the progress board to help in the development of these agency goals, because we want the agency goals tied to benchmarks, so these things are all connected together. And the governor sees a very important role in the progress board, maybe more so than in the past, you know, raising them to some real responsibility for helping build this performance system. That was his message yesterday to the members of the progress board. And so we will, and the progress board, as I think you all know, is a part of DAS at the moment. And so my job is to work directly with the progress board and Jeff Tryons and use that board to make these performance management initiatives line up with the benchmarks.
Thanks.
Further questions? Would you mind introducing your deputy? I believe she's here. And if you have other staff here.
No, actually, she's not my deputy, but Cindy Becker.
I didn't know the exact title, so
Cindy
I used
Becker
that.
Is the Assistant Director for Legislative Affairs and everything else that I need to get done, Mr. Chairman. And Cindy, would you stand up?
Becker.
I think many of you may know Cindy. I mean, she was the deputy at the lottery when everything was going well. Just to make sure that's clear. Cindy ran the printing division and was the deputy when we had something called General Services before it was merged with DAS. She was the deputy there and so has a long history in state government. I'm very lucky to get her. So thank you for giving me a chance to introduce her. I actually have three important women in my life, to be honest. You know, Cindy Becker, the person who carries the deputy, is someone I think you all know, Teresa McHugh, who has done a marvelous job building this budget. And in spite of the holes we have in it, Teresa and her staff have really worked hard to try to put this together for the governor. And Colleen Seelock, who some of you may know because of her long career in the Department of Justice and in the Secretary of State's office, is on my staff as an assistant director. And she manages functions of motor pool, purchasing, human services, all of those administrative functions. So I'm very fortunate to have three very talented women working with me.
I can't imagine why you have so much trouble with such a simple budget.
Well, Mr. Chairman, there was one other thing that as we get into the budget discussions that I plan to tell the committee, that I want DAS to be the example of what we're asking all other agencies, the example of, you know, how you work efficiently, how you look for opportunities to change. And I'm planning some changes in DAS to sort of tighten it up, to refocus on some things that I think are our priorities and maybe some things that could be done in other ways. I'm going to be looking for it to be done in other ways. There are always a couple questions about things like the state motor pool. Should the state run a state motor pool? We're going to look at that seriously. But the bottom line for me and what I will make the case for you all is that, you know, if we look to have somebody else run the motor pool, we need assurances that we will at least have an operation that's as good as what we can do today. If it's not as good as what we can do today and we lose services, then I don't think we should be interested in. So, you know, I guess my pledge to you all that I'll make all session is that we're going to try to make DAS the example of that other agencies can follow. So, Mr. Chairman, I didn't know if you...
I'm not
sure. Do you
sure.
want me to talk about the reorg or any of that? Or
well, if you've gotten that far or anything, if you have the time, I understood that you needed to... around
I still have some
out.
Time, Mr. Chairman, and we can...
I'm not sure that my late friend that advised me not to take the chairmanship or to be on the Human Resources Committee would advise you to come back to Oregon.
Well, that may be true, Mr. Chairman, but it's a great... I think
if you can give us some insight on that, it would certainly be appreciated.
Well, let me... Just a few things I can say to you on behalf, I think, of the governor in this particular instance, that... You especially, Mr. Chairman, understand what this all started when I was... I'll take some responsibility for this. My interest in human services was to try to build an integrated service system where clients didn't have to deal with six siloed divisions and so on, and I spent 6 years trying to do that. The reorg was sort of the next step in that, and that is how to reorganize the department in a way that this integration would actually manifest itself out in the field in better services. And that's what I believe Governor Kitzhaber intended with this reorganization. And the principles of the reorganization were really, how do you meet the current needs with a different structure? How do you eliminate redundancy? Can you save money and flatten the organization? Is there a way for these divisions to share resources that they never have, and to sort of preserve the partnerships that we have out in the field? Because Human Services operates largely on its partnerships in communities all across Oregon. I mean, the Governor's Seniors Commission here is a good example of that partnership. So all that was part of what was supposed to be considered in the reorganization. And in any reorganization of the size of this, you're taking the largest agency you have in state government and beginning to reorganize it is going to be a challenge. You have 9,000 employees spread all over the state, and to try to reorganize it is a difficult thing. So having said that, and knowing that the department's been at this for 2 years, I think where the governor is on this is asking Gene Thorne to say, we've been into this about a year and a half or 2 years. There's a mixed view. It's probably the fairest way to say this, a mixed view of how successful the reorganization has been to this date. And what the governor has asked Gene to do, and I think this is what any of us would do in a reorganization of this size, is to say, let's stop here, let's look back and see where we've come, let's see whether there's some parts of this reorganization that haven't been effective in the way that we expected it to be, and what changes do we need to make, and move on. The governor hasn't said we're going to throw out the reorganization, because the reorganization principles of better service to our clients, more integrated service to our clients, more efficiency, some savings and stuff, all those principles still exist. But it's time now to step back and take a look at where we are and how we're, what kind of mid-course corrections do we need to do. And as I said, I think if any of us were running a large reorganization of this kind, we would do that. We would stop at some point and take stock of where we are. And that's what the governor has asked Gene to do. And his expectation is that she will come up with a set of recommendations about what ought to be the next steps in this reorganization. And clearly there have been some concerns about the split between the field people and the policy people, and whether or not that set up an environment where if things don't go well, the field people can say, well, it's because the policy's lousy, and the policy people can say, well, it's not the policy. You guys just don't know how to implement it. So, clearly there's some need to re-examine the field and the central office. There have been people who have said that as the department has tried to reduce its workforce, the reduction has been at the loss of field people and not of central office people. I've heard that several times. I don't know if that's true, but that's what Gene needs to probe and find out. Are we cutting the field and keeping the central office in the same state? There have been suggestions that as this work has been done, we've actually created situations in the field where, for example, in child welfare, we've put more children at risk because we don't have the supervisory people in place that we should have for the frontline caseworkers, that we in fact took more supervisors and moved them out, and we left the frontline people without the more experienced supervision that they have to make good decisions in child welfare. Again, that sense is there. I don't know to what extent it's true, but that's what Gene is going to find out at this point. There have been, I think, in this over the last year and a half, concerns from the groups that we work with, advocacy organizations, people that represent the clients, that we've lost connection with those people in this reorganization, that we really haven't given those folks an opportunity to weigh in on the reorganization and the direction we're going. So there are a number of concerns that people have expressed, and there are others who have said the reorganization is the right thing to do, it needs to proceed, and we're at a mid-course time of examination, and that's where the governor is on this.
Senator Morissette.
Thank you. I was always of the opinion that it should be phased in, and we should do certain counties and see how it works, and then do other counties. And if you can do Multnomah County, you could do it them all, maybe. But
right.
But I to me, that would be the logical way to go, is try it in some places. Now, I believe there's one southern county where they were already doing it. Was that Jackson County? There's one.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Morissette, without being critical of what's gone on in my absence, that there were four counties that we began to pilot, and largely because I believe that it's better to hit singles than home runs, and I thought, you know, you want to pilot these things and test out where you are, and we have four counties. Two, I think, have been pretty successful, most particularly Jackson County,
okay. Which
is where we have a wonderful site, integrated service site, built in partnership with the county. County commissioners were very involved, and I mean, I wish I could take legislators down there. We've had people from all over the country come to visit that. When I was in Baltimore, I arranged for the Rockefeller Institute to send a team of people there because they were doing a national survey on service integration. They came back and said it's the best we've seen in America so far. So we do have some models that we've started into it, and I think in 2 years ago we sort of accelerated this, and you know, a decision was made to move it along in a quicker, more fast-paced way, if you will, and stuff. And again, it's not my place to criticize how that decision was made or why, but we have begun this in a more limited scope, and there are examples for you to see, and it'd be wonderful if you ever could at some point. But Jackson, we did one, and we did one in Eastern Oregon, a service integration site, pilot site. One was in Coos Bay, and I've forgotten where the other one was in Eastern Oregon. I forgot the site.
Me.
I think it was Hermiston.
Yeah, I think you're right, John. I think you're right.
May I? Yes. I believe the Jackson County model was already basically in existence, wasn't it?
Nope.
No, it wasn't.
Chairman, Senator Morissette, no, that's the building was leased. It was a Big Bear hardware store on the northern end of Jackson County. We leased that building several years ago. That was the foundation for it. The new building that was built in partnership with the county was opened in 1999, I believe. So, but Jackson County is the oldest service integration site, and then we were moving towards a West Medford site to go along with the one we had in the northern part of the county.
Well, I guess my feeling was that we should move along more slowly than we were, instead of trying to do them all at once, is just, you know, continue to do the model sites and see how things work in different environments, because they may not, you know, which buildings are available, how much moving people would have to make to do, you know, physically, if they don't have to move physically, what kind of interconnections what problems are found in different kinds of sites that would help facilitate the big move. So I'm hoping that's what we'll be doing.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Morissette, I'm sure that the timing and the scheduling of the further rollout of this is something that Jane Thorne's going to pay real close attention to, Senator. Mr. Chairman, I think that's probably it. I just wanted to make clear what the governor had asked Jane to do, so you would know that, you know, the instructions that she has. On the score, so
okay, and then we'll follow up with that on next Monday.
Okay.
And we appreciate you coming. Welcome back, and
thank you
for your time today.
It's great to be back, Mr. Chairman.
We look forward to working with you in the future here.
Baltimore's not Oregon, so
it didn't rain in Baltimore.
It didn't rain in Baltimore. It was extraordinarily hot, Senator, and but you know, it's an interesting community, but it's not Oregon.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Any further comments from the committee? With that, figuring that you wouldn't mind getting a little extra time to work on other things since we've been very busy, I'll adjourn our committee until Monday.
Thank you.
Thank you.